They've opted in, and they've opted in for content. So send them more content.
You're listening to the world's best business podcast with Stelly Efti and Heaton Shaw, who insisted on having Stelly's name mentioned first, despite him having more Twitter followers.
Shut up!
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to get shit done, stop everything else and focus on this podcast for the next 20 minutes. Then go back to work and crush it.
Hey, Heaton. Today I think we want to talk about lead nurturing.
Yeah, lead nurturing.
So, you know, you did some marketing, you did some prospecting, whatever the hell you did, you scraped some lists. You got some names and emails of people you want to approach.
You basically have emails.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now,
but they're a lead, because lead nurturing means they're already a lead. Or well, is it that this is cold emailing and I just have an email list? Like, so let's start on the right foot.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think people have different meanings attached to the word lead.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think for the purpose of this podcast, it might be cool to look at it from both perspectives. Number one, let's look at a lead from a cold sales perspective.
Okay, so then that's not a lead.
Well,
how do you in sales look at it?
In sales, I would it depends on what organization you
are. So let's say you have a list of emails.
Yes.
And you've never contacted them.
Yes.
Okay. What do you guys call that?
So some people would call those prospects.
Yeah.
Some people would call that just a list. And some people would call that a cold leads.
Okay.
Right?
So in marketing, I guess you could say that's a cold lead, and a warm lead would be one that actually signed up.
Signed up. Exactly.
You know, somewhere on a lead gen form.
Yes.
Right?
So maybe that's the way we want to break it down. Let's talk about what
cold
you do with cold leads and what do you do with warm leads.
Okay, let's start with cold.
All right. So
cold is
like, cold is, well, you,
it's just a list of emails.
A list of emails.
Maybe you have their names.
You should.
Yeah.
Likely, hopefully.
Yeah.
There's just a finite number of how you create cold email lists.
Yeah.
Right? You either buy them.
Yeah.
You can scrape them.
Yep.
Or you can basically generate them very manually. Like you go on LinkedIn, you research people, you find them on Twitter. And
there's also a bunch of tools that help make it easy to get an email.
Yes.
So like there's just a lot of stuff around that. And it's actually interesting because like I get emails from people and there's no unsubscribe. But they emailed me, right? So it's also a new tactic, I would say, or newer popularized tactic where you get someone's email and you just email them as if it's not a marketing email. It's not a sales email, but you're just trying to email them.
You know, I think in the spirit of the law, when one human being emails another human being, that's totally fine. I don't need to, I didn't need you to subscribe to like Stelly is allowed to email me, right? But a lot of times what truly happens behind the scenes is that those emails are automated,
right?
They come from a personal email address, but they really are not like sent by a human being. They just, you know, a bulk email, right?
Yeah.
So one to many. And let's not go into the legality of if that's allowed or not.
I don't even care about that. It's just more about what's going on right now. Right?
I think what's going on right now, what you were experiencing probably is the popularity of cold or outbound sales in technology.
Okay.
I think it used to not be as popular or being popular more in the very like high-end enterprise kind of startups.
Yeah.
And the smaller SMB startups used to not do that at all.
Yeah.
And now outbound sales becomes more and more popular.
What do you think changed?
That's a good question. What changed? Probably a number of things. What comes to mind immediately is B2B startups realizing that like some fads just didn't hold onto their promise. So people realize that they can't just all build like viral apps in the B2B space, like be the Dropbox or be the whatever the example is, Yammer or like. So there's not easy ways to just build something really cool. And then in the B2B space, if it's SMB, it's just going to get adoption without a lot of like effort.
Yeah,
I think that that's definitely been one where people tried different startups went through different fashions of what to try, and all these things didn't quite work out as perfectly. So they looked for other ways.
Yeah.
I think that there were a bunch of people that started sharing knowledge in that space.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron Ross wrote the Predictive Revenue book.
Yeah.
I think I had a hand or two in the popularizing sales within startups. So more people started writing about it than they had like sales hacker meetups and conferences.
Yeah.
So it's more popular. There's more knowledge. And sales is not as foreign of a thing anymore that is weird. So most startups
not just limited to enterprise. Right?
Yes, it's not limited to enterprise.
Okay. Yeah, I'll add one obvious thing too, which is like, I think you're right. Enough people hit the problem of how do I get customers?
Yeah.
Right. And then they started trying to figure out how to get customers, and happen to be in the SMB space, and there happens to be a lot of, you know, like I remember, let's say 2 years ago, there was a company, they already sold, and it was a B2B company, and 2 years ago, they told me what they were doing, and what they were doing was scraping Crunchbase and a bunch of other stuff and doing all this stuff just to get an email and then emailing the people. And they got to, in I think 2 or 3 years, they were able to get from, you know, doing that all the way to an acquisition.
Right.
Right. It was a double digit millions acquisition. So it wasn't a small one. It wasn't an acquihire. And back then it was unique.
Yeah.
Right. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting what you guys are doing. Right. We didn't really do things like that.
Yeah.
And so then I noticed the scrappiness. So I would say that part of it, I feel like came out of scrappiness.
Yeah.
Right. And people wanting a way to get customers and not, honestly, I think it's still one of the easiest ways to get customers is as outbound emailing. So, okay. So let's say I've got an email list,
right?
There's a lot of ways to get it. What do I do next? Let's talk about it from a sales perspective, because just my personal opinion is when you're doing cold emails and it's an email list that's cold, it's sales.
Yes.
You should treat it like sales.
Yes.
Don't treat it like marketing.
Absolutely.
Marketing to me is more of something someone inbounded in these days.
Yeah.
Right. It's not something you do outbound because it just doesn't work. So if you're doing outbound, I would first consider it a sales problem.
Absolutely.
Cool? Okay.
Absolutely. I think also framing it that way is good because you're going to write better emails or emails that get more responsiveness, because you don't want to write outbound emails or cold emails as if it's a marketing message or a newsletter or something like that. Because it's just going to get very low response and open rates.
Yeah. And people unsubscribe because they never subscribe to it.
Yes.
Right. But a human emailing another human, as you said, is fair game, so to speak.
So let's do two things. Step one, even stepping before the what do you do when you have the list, is spend more time than you want to on making sure you're putting together the right list.
So good target list?
Good.
How do you
target
do that?
List. Well, knowing who your ideal customer is.
Okay.
And if you don't know, you have to guess, but guess narrowly. Don't make it too broad.
So one of my favorite things to do is actually take that list and then throw it through an API like Clearbit.
Yeah.
And then get a lot more data. Because what Clearbit does is it'll give you the social account, LinkedIn, title, all kinds of company, all kinds of information, even if it's a personal Gmail.
Right.
So they really try to match it. The match rate's pretty good. So if you did that, then all of a sudden you end up with a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
With a bunch of emails and a bunch of criteria.
Right.
Right. Okay. So that's better, right?
Yes.
That's a little more targeted.
That's a little bit more targeted.
Okay.
And then you really want to segment. So when you're starting out, if you say we sell HR software and the criteria is a company with less than 1,000 employees, that's still way too broad.
Yeah.
So then you might want to segment more and more, and you might want to have like 4 different cold email lists versus having one gigantic one.
Okay, so break the list out into groups.
Yes.
And figure out what are reasonable groups.
Yes.
So don't just say it's 1,000 employees or less, because there's probably a lot of companies out there that match that.
Yeah.
So what's the purpose of like grouping them? Like I just want to give people really tactical.
Yeah. The technical purpose of that is that you're gonna get results that are not frantic and they're not all over the place.
Okay.
So because if you email 1,000 companies in 1,000 different industries that all have 1,000 employees, you'll get very different results from each and every one of them, and it's gonna be hard for you to learn what worked and what didn't or who liked what.
Yeah.
But if you segment it out, if you break it down, you'll know this industry doesn't respond to this, but this industry does.
Okay.
And also the results you're getting are more likely to be consistent. So when you send 100 emails today, you're going to get similar results to when you send 100 emails tomorrow, versus when you mix a list, you send the same amount of emails with the same message and you get different results.
Yeah.
And that leads to you spending all this time in sending emails and not knowing what to expect or how to improve something.
So tactically, there's size of company. So bucket that up appropriately.
Yeah.
If you go look at some of the drop downs of when people ask for size of company, you can probably find the buckets. They're pretty common. Another way would be, as you mentioned, actually, I'll add a different one, title.
Yeah.
So what their title is. And as you mentioned, the next one's industry.
Industry.
Right.
Yeah.
And it really is going to depend on what you're selling.
Yes.
Right. Or what you're trying to market or whatever. Okay, cool. So we've got some groups.
Yes.
Now
we have the email list. Now the next thing that we need to do is we need to, because this is sales, what we want to do is we want to send emails in small batches, but we want to do that consistently. So
what do you mean by small? What's
well,
small?
Let's say you have 10,000 emails. You don't want to send a 10,000 email batch email at once.
Okay.
What you want to do is you want to send per sales rep you have or per person that's involved in this campaign, maybe 50 emails a day.
You would send 50 emails per person.
Per person
and you
per
say
day.
Per person because that's the email they're sending.
Yes.
Like human to human.
Yes.
Okay. So per person that's selling. So let's say if you're just a single founder, you'd send 50 in a day.
I would send 50 in a day.
Why is 50 the number? Just curious.
It could be 30, it could be 100, but it's not multiple hundreds.
Okay. And Gmail has a 500 limit. 500 Gmail, sends a day, right?
Yes.
Is that right?
That's Gmail does not say, does not state a specific number as far as I know. Yeah. But
I think it's actually 500.
It could be.
Yeah. Okay.
But what they'll do, even if it's not 500, I know of people that were sending 200-300 a day and then still got blocked from Gmail.
Makes sense.
Right? Okay. So one of the reasons you don't want to send thousands of emails if you're Google Apps is that they're going to lock you out of your email account.
Yeah.
You don't want to be blacklisted.
That's right.
And if you've made a big mistake in that email, if you send it to 10,000 people, that's it. You're fucked.
You're done.
You're done.
Your list is done.
Your list is burned, done, basically. Yes. Now you need to go and do all that work again. So the beauty of 50 a day per person is A, it keeps you out of the troubled water of like blacklisted and spam and all that. The next thing is it's a better workflow. So as a sales rep or somebody trying to do sales, you'll send 50 emails. If you do a good job, you'll get a few responses that you now need to follow up. You need to jump on a call. You need to schedule demos.
So you have work to do.
You have work to do. And what you're doing is you want to, you know, maybe at the end of the day, you send out the emails. At the beginning of the day, you reply to stuff. You make your calls and demos. And then you research another bunch of cold emails to send emails.
So you turn it into kind of a process and you have basically these different cold leads in different phases.
Yes.
Some have responded, some haven't, et cetera.
Yes.
Okay. So now let's say I've sent a bunch of these.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of responses out of 50, right? And I'm sending more every day.
You're sending 50 every day, right?
50 every day. Now what?
Well, now what you need to do at the very early days, my advice to you would be to stick in a mind frame of learning more so than on like immediately trying to get results. And somebody was asking me this, and I'd be curious to hear your opinion on it. Somebody was asking me, Stella, how do you do A/B testing in cold emails when you're sending small batches?
Yeah.
Like it'll take forever to know statistically correct things. So here's the hack that I suggested.
Yeah.
The first 1 or 2 weeks where I would start a new campaign, I would potentially follow up on calling these people and calling, again, people segmented, the people that didn't open my email, the people that opened my email, and the people that responded, right? Yeah. And my goal would not be to sell them or convince them, but to learn why they did or didn't do something or how my email was perceived by them. So
So you'd actually call them?
I'd actually call them.
That means you got to get their phone number.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
So that would be part of something you did.
Part of something. Yeah. If I the world I live in, I always want email and phone number.
That's cool. Yeah, it's good to know. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
It's a big difference between that and how maybe other people would suggest
it. Yes, yes. Right? So I would try to call people and figure out, you know, and the script that can be very simple. You call and you say, hey, I sent you an email this morning.
Yeah.
You know, I saw that you opened it, but you didn't reply. I just wanted to personally check in and go, what sucked about it? Like, what did I do wrong? Right?
Because they're not expecting that call.
They don't expect that call. They expect the call of, I send you an email and it would be really great. And they expect me to try to push them into responding or doing what I wanted them to do.
Yeah, but here you ask them a question they have to answer.
Yes. Yeah. And if you do it authentically, they'll want to answer it.
Yeah.
And now you're learning. And that doesn't mean that now that their guard is down and they start telling you all these things, doesn't mean that you can't keep talking to them and then sell them.
Totally.
Yeah. Right? But your first goal is to figure out what worked, what didn't work, why. The people that responded, if I have somebody that responds to this, says, yes, I'm interested, let's have a demo call. The first thing that I'll ask you in that demo call, I'll say, hey, Heaton, so excited to talk to you. Let me ask you first. Let's get that out of the way. When I sent you that email out of the blue, what did you think? Yeah. What did you expect?
What
Why
resonated?
Did you respond?
Yeah.
What was it That's about good. It that you made you respond?
And is your goal that if you do this every day, you literally change it every day? Like if you learn something? Or
if I learn something,
what's your cadence? Is it change it a couple times a week, change it every day? I'm sure it depends on the feedback, but people love to know how many times.
So I would say that you want to change things. You want to do an audit maybe every week where you collect feedback throughout the week.
Yeah.
And then once a week, you sit down maybe with a team and you look at, here's everything that people told me. What do we want to change? Because you don't want to be too erratic and zigzagging and emotional on somebody screamed at you something and you change things based on just one individual conversation.
So don't change things just on one person's piece of feedback unless it's that, like, unless you think it's that universal.
Yes.
Okay.
And usually it's a good idea to have some sanity check on this stuff and sit down and talk to somebody else about it as well. So once a week is probably a good cadence there or a good rhythm.
Well, I mean, it's copywriting at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like if you're writing an email. So that obviously other eyes on that are always good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So and then what you need to do before you even start sending the emails, part of the workflow for doing cold emails is thinking about the first email, but then thinking about the majority of people will not respond to that email. So yes, you can call them and try to reach them, but then what's the follow-up email that you're
going to send? This is for people that did not respond, but they opened.
Yes.
Okay.
So
someone opened it, they didn't respond, you send them a different email.
It could even just be somebody didn't open, you send them.
Or they didn't open. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So there was no deliberate action that was taken.
Yes.
Right.
So you want
everybody that didn't reply.
Yes. You want to, as you write your first email, you want to think about like another two or three emails that you write that, and think about the follow-up sequence before you even start with the outbound emailing campaign, right? Because the majority of people will not respond and you need to follow up. Some people have some data that says 8 times on a cold email. Some people will say it's 3 to 4. It depends on many things.
Yeah.
When it comes to a warm conversation, I'm famous of telling people to indefinitely follow up. Like if I had a conversation with you, I'll never stop following up.
Yeah.
But on the cold end, it's probably 3 to 6 times is a good.
Before you just give up and say they're not going to respond.
Yeah. Right. And then the last email that you want to send, if you do cold email outreach, if you send like the 6th email and you're kind of done with it, so you can send what, quote unquote, the breakup email that basically says, hey, goodbye from Stelly could be a good subject line for that. And then the buddy says, Heaton, I try to reach you 3 to 6 times with this message. I kind of assume that it's not the right time for you right now. It's sad, but here's all my contact information. Whenever you want, you can get in touch with me. I'm taking you off my list. Yeah. So you'll never hear from me again. Yeah. It's a very effective email. So that's kind of the
beginning to end, basically.
Beginning to end of how to do that and how to think about that.
Okay, cool. And I'm sure you have links and stuff.
Yes, we have lots of material on that.
Yeah.
So let me ask you now.
Yeah.
You know, let's think about this from a warm lead perspective. Mm-hmm. Specifically for people, let's not think about the people that sign up maybe for a free trial, although that might also be interesting, but specifically for people that
they sign up for your newsletter, like a newsletter. Email list.
Yes.
Right? Or to download something from you.
Download a white paper, a webinar attendance.
That's still a warm lead. That's not a trial sign up. So let's stay away from the trial sign up.
Yep.
Okay.
So what do you do with these people?
So I think in marketing, I've tested a lot of things, and what we learned is that if you just add a checkbox of give me a demo in the opt-ins for even a newsletter or any of this stuff, that's the quickest, easiest way to get actually leads that want demos. So that's a way to take a warm one and turn it hot.
Nice.
Right? Give them the option when they're giving you their email.
Nice.
So that's something I don't see enough people do.
Yeah.
When we started doing it in our...
Who's doing that? I'm not even sure I've seen...
We do it in our webinar opt-ins.
Okay.
But like one of the things people don't realize about this is it's likely someone's reading your content. That's how you got this warm lead.
Right.
There's something they're reading. It's not actually cold outreach. This is different, right? This is like inbound marketing, right? The thing people forget is that like someone signed up to get information and content 99% of the time, right? 100% of the time. They want content. They want information. They might not even know you have a product. So by having the checkbox, even if they don't check it or whatever, or uncheck it if you auto-check it and all that kind of stuff, it makes them understand that this isn't just content they can get. They have an option of getting software. So when you're selling software, if the content is your marketing and that's how you're getting people to your door, I guess, or to your content, they don't necessarily know that you have software. So I can't stress that point enough, but like we've learned over time that just because we get so much traffic doesn't mean they know we have software.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they even know what the fuck we do.
Yeah.
What they do know is that they like our content.
Yes.
And they want more. Right. So the way I think of like these warm leads is just give them as many opportunities as you can to remind them that you have software or let them know that you have software, but you don't have to be pushy. So the things that work are like if someone signed up for an email list, I'm one to say, regardless of how many emails you're sending or how many blog posts you're sending, actually email everybody the blog post or at least start like that.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're, blogging like 5 times a week, send everyone the email. Don't go do like a weekly roundup email and stuff like that. That stuff doesn't really work as well.
All right. So if I subscribe to your blog, you would send me, and you blog 5 times a week, you would send me an email for each blog post.
Yeah, I would start that way.
Holy shit.
Yeah, unless people get pissed off. But like you don't know if they're going to get pissed off unless you try it.
Right.
Right. And then you could always tune it and then start doing segmentation. So if they read something, for example, if it's a marketing blog, they read something on social media and there are people that love social media content, don't send them other content. Send them only the social media content. But that's more of an advanced strategy.
Yeah.
But that's why I like starting with sending everybody all the blog posts. The reason is you won't get traffic for the blog posts if you don't send them an email about it.
Yeah.
And if you send it to them in a roundup in a week, you only get the opportunity to give it to them once a week and get the traffic once a week.
Yeah.
And usually you're going to do it on a Friday or a Monday, which are generally shitty days.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So And so let's say you're listening to me, right? And you've got people on an email list, you're sending them every blog post. The simple thing that we've learned to do is we literally put a PS at the bottom of the email and say, PS, we have software you can use too to make your life easier with marketing. Sign up here. Right. And that works too. But our emails don't have all the content in them. Mm-hmm. They only have a snippet of the content. It's very small and short. And you have a button or you have a link and that's it. And then you have this PS at the bottom to get people to sign up for the software. That works too. So I think unlike sales and emailing people around the sales and the cold emails, you're literally trying to get them to take an action right there.
Yeah.
In marketing, you're just trying to keep them around. You want to make sure they're clicking and opening more than you're trying to get them to turn into a hot lead or sign up for your trial.
Right.
So because you get a lot of touch points. While with cold email, you don't really get that many touch points that you know they're interested in. Right?
Yeah.
So I think that's it. Like for me, it's like, don't be so pushy, but spend a lot of time, send them more email than you think you should. Mm-hmm. That's content, because they signed up to receive content. That's a simple reason, right?
So let's say, so that makes perfect sense on the blog post side. On how do you think about like frequency in terms of a webinar? That's an interesting example. So somebody signs up for a webinar, you do the thing with like, let them check the box or uncheck the box if they want a demo. Yeah. And then they participated, say, in the webinar, and they didn't get the demo, right? Because they didn't check that box or whatever. What do you do with that? You have that email address. You know they were interested in that webinar. What to do next with it?
Yeah. So everybody that tends to get on a webinar list, you should be emailing them all your blog posts too.
Okay.
So everybody that gets on any list that's a marketing list
and
they're not necessarily a customer yet, although even if they're a customer, I would keep emailing them.
Mm-hmm.
You just email them. So you just put them on your marketing list.
Okay. So even if they don't subscribe to it explicitly.
Well, yeah, it doesn't matter. They opted in.
Okay.
They wanted to hear about the webinar.
Yes.
You can, if you don't feel comfortable with that, you can put language around that opt in like, hey, we're gonna email you.
Okay.
Right? Or you can auto have another checkbox and auto checkbox that.
What a lot of people do is they have a newsletter and then they have a blog, right?
Yeah.
And in the newsletter, they make some other announcements maybe that they don't have on the blog or whatever, or point to some other things.
Yeah, special stuff.
So would you add somebody that subscribes to a webinar to all your email lists, to the newsletter, to the blog stuff, or just to the blog stuff because it's the most high value content?
So there's a few things there. So if I know that the emails are valuable, like the blog emails, and they're getting good open and click rates, then I don't have a problem putting someone who signed up for a webinar on that list too.
Okay.
Again, if you are uncomfortable with that, put language when they're signing up that they're going to receive, you know, other things too, right? And you can checkbox that too. It's okay, right? Like, we've never had a problem with it though. Like, and the open rates and click rates are just as high with those webinar sort of attendees as well. Okay. The reason is they came in, and in fact, it's takes more effort and time and energy and even resources in someone's head, in a prospect's or a lead's head, to actually sign up for a webinar than even just sign up for an email list.
Yeah.
So in fact, the intent is higher on learning and content with a webinar. That's why it's kind of fair game. That's why I'm pretty sure that's my thesis on why we haven't seen a difference.
Yeah.
And then because you have that opportunity, the other thing that we've learned to do is we actually have specific demo webinars. So once you have their email and you're sending them your blog posts or whatever, you can start actually doing weekly demo webinars that you're sending to the whole list and getting them to opt in.
Right.
You can even make that the PS at the bottom if you know that demos convert for you.
Right.
And trial signups are not as great, on the list.
Yeah. What do people do? So it sounds like you don't think too much in terms of segmentation of going too fancy with it in the sense of
saying. Not in the beginning.
A webinar about XYZ, so we're going to send these people lots more content just about this category.
Grouping segmentation only works when you have enough numbers.
Yeah.
So if you only have like 1,000 numbers? People, I think if you have 1,000 people, that's still not enough.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at more 5,000-10,000 email lists because if you break it up into 3 or 4, and you do the math, it just starts being small numbers, right? And then you don't get open rates and clicks.
Is even 10,000 enough? If you had 10,000, would you start segmenting it a bit?
10,000 with 2 or 3 buckets, it's not unreasonable.
Okay.
There's also buckets like based on behavior, right? So just like you were doing with the sales stuff, it's like if someone's not clicking, you might send them an email and say, hey, do you just want to unsubscribe? If they're not clicking or opening, right? If they're opening and not clicking, then you might send them a different email. right? And if they're opening and clicking, then and they're doing that a lot, then they just keep getting. You might even get more aggressive with them, and they just keep getting more emails.
Oh, right? so segmentation there would be just based on engagement
behavior,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you look who are the most engaged people on the email list, who are kind of in the middle, and who are not engaged at all, and you send them some messages.
Yeah,
that's cool.
And if you're not sending enough email, you're not going to be able to get that kind of behavior data. So you're not going to be able to segment the audience in a way of. How are these people active? So, like, are they really truly active with the brand clicking and opening? So.
I would assume that most kind of email, you know, marketing automation tools, you know, have the abilities for you to segment.
In that way, yeah. Almost everyone has that. Okay. Every product has that, even the simplest one.
Okay. Yeah. And then, so, but in the earliest, until you get to, like, at least 10,000, let's say, don't worry about it.
Not the segmentation around like topics and stuff, but the segmentation of opens and all that stuff you can do if you've sent enough emails to these people.
What do you do? Yeah. What do people do who don't have a blog? I don't know if that's a weird use case, but somebody that might have written an ebook or something or does webinars, but really doesn't have a place to point them.
Make sure you're sending them content, whatever it is, right? Like just make sure you're sending them stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Whatever it is. It doesn't really matter as long as you're sort of nurturing them, right? That's what nurturing is all about. You're sending them content, helping keep them in the funnel or helping keep them engaged even if they're not ready to buy yet or ready to sign up.
Did you guys have somebody dedicated? Like, do you in your marketing teams thought of somebody dedicated as like an email marketer? Did you
have like people in that role? We've had dedicated email marketers.
What do you think about that?
I think if you've got enough volume of email you're sending, it makes a lot of sense because you want someone experimenting, learning and stuff like that. But like, I would say that's a more of a scaling strategy. Early on, like it shouldn't be that hard to do it yourself, right? And just have someone's part-time doing stuff like
that. The beautiful thing is if you blog, which you should probably, you can use that blog to turn it into webinars or ebooks or something else, and then you can just send them the blog post, right?
Yeah. And you can also go read about how we talked about reusing content.
There you go. There's another podcast you guys can listen to.
That's right.
Anything else that you guys do that or things that mistakes people make when they do all this? Because what I see is, you put in all this effort into like getting people to your webinar, download your ebook, but then mostly people do very little with that list of emails.
Yeah.
Or maybe they do a one-time thing right after and then they kind of forget that
list. Yeah, I think generally speaking, people don't email their lists often enough and they worry about unsubscribes and stuff. And here's an interesting anecdote. The most successful emails I've seen also have the highest unsubscribe rates because they were actually successful at getting people to open and click, which means some people opened, didn't like it, and unsubscribed. So most of the best emails that I've seen, like 9 times out of 10, also have a high unsubscribe rate. But what you gain in leads, activity, traffic, whatever,
sharing,
trumps the unsubscribes you're getting. So it you know, some people would tell you, hey, you should balance it. I would tell you, like, look, if they want to leave, like, let them leave. Like, make it easy for them to not get your content if they don't want it, because there's enough people out there that will probably want it.
Yeah. There's I don't know if startup. Well, everybody has that vanity issue where people like the size of whatever their virtual penis, right? So it's like, oh, our email list is blah, and then the question is like, what does that really translate to?
So what people are doing now is they'll count it as there's a total email list and then there's the actives every week.
Mm.
So did they click once? From an email, not even open it. Do they actually click through?
Click.
And if they click through them, they're on an active list, not just a subscriber.
Subscriber.
Right? Yeah. Like I was just talking to someone and she was telling me like she has 30,000 emails and 11,000 are active. I'm like, cool, you actually know how many are active. And she's like, which one should I send these emails to? I'm like, well, if you have the active ones and you know you can treat them even more specially, you can even like send them messages like telling them that they're active, right? Telling them that they're awesome, right? And there's more for them and, you know, whatever, like trying to figure out and learn more about them.
Yeah. Awesome. Anything else? Let's round this up with tips. What's the final tip on nurturing your leads?
I think for me, the final tip on nurturing your leads in terms of from a marketing standpoint is like they've opted in for content. So